You're not only a mom, you're a teacher, a chef, an Uber driver, you're super mom. So why is it so hard to get the kids to eat their veggies or take their vitamins? Child Life Essentials has a long line of products to keep kids healthy and even fill in the gaps for those picky eaters. Mix multivitamins, echinacea, zinc, probiotics, and more in their food, drinks, or serve up a spoonful. They're that delicious. Learn more at childlifenutrition.com and save 20% on all Child Life Essentials products with code IHEARTCL at amazon.com/childlife.
Join me, Chelsea Ursin, on season 3 of my podcast, Dear Young Rocker. Tune in to hear some of my favorite musicians tell stories from their awkward musical beginnings, reconnect with the teenager they used to be, and remember what it's like to fall in love with your favorite band for the first time. Listen to Dear Young Rocker season 3 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Sam Edis.
And I'm Amy Nelson. Welcome to What's Her Story with Sam and Amy.
This is a show about the world's most remarkable women, their professional and personal journeys.
Together, we'll hear from gold medalists, best-selling authors, and leaders of the world's most iconic brands.
Today, we get to talk to Shannon Watt, who for many people is an icon of gun violence prevention in America. Those of you who heard our episode with Marsha Cross, she was brought to tears at the mere mention of Shannon Watts because of what she has done for so many people. She created Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America.
It's easy to see why Marsha really admires Shannon. I do too. You know, Sam, I don't think we've ever talked about this, but you know, I grew up in Ohio, a suburb of Columbus. And when I was a teenager in high school, two of my classmates were playing with a father's gun and one killed the other accidentally. And there was really no conversation about it, either in our community, by our teachers, by parents. And I now know, right, there was this missing voice. We didn't have the voice of a parent who wanted to keep their children safe in my community or in the national arena. And that's why I'm so excited for this conversation.
So the NRA has called you their worst nightmare. You now have 5 million supporters. How did this all begin?
Well, you know, I will say that I call myself the NRA's worst nightmare. I really do think that they never wanted women and mothers to organize in this country against them. That was literally their worst nightmare. And when Sandy Hook happened, I was a stay-at-home mom in suburban Indiana, right outside of Indianapolis. And I had been home for about 5 years, taking a break from my corporate career because my husband and I were blending our families. We had 5 kids all together. And I was just getting ready to go back to work, to think about looking for a job. And I can remember very clearly, you know, it was December 14th, 2012, a very cold day. I was folding laundry, watching the TV, and suddenly there was breaking news that there was an active shooter in a place called Newtown, Connecticut, in an elementary school. And like the rest of the country, I was devastated and riveted and just overwhelmed by what I was seeing unfold on my television. But then over the next day, I was enraged because I was seeing pundits and politicians come on to talk about what had happened. And they were saying that the solution was somehow more guns, that somehow 400 million guns and very few gun laws was not the cause of this, right? It was not enough guns and maybe even too many gun laws. And I didn't know anything about organizing. I didn't know anything about gun violence. I just knew that that was a lie. And then that day, the next day, December 15th, I started a Facebook page that grew into Moms Demand Action.
And how did you, you started the Facebook page. How did people find you?
I had 75 Facebook friends. And so, yeah, so many. And I really don't know who I thought I was talking to because, again, I didn't have that many followers and I didn't really know what a viral moment was, right? I didn't even have a Twitter handle. I just was outraged. And I knew how to create a Facebook page. It was lightning in a bottle right? My Facebook was suddenly overwhelmed with DMs from mostly women all across the country who were saying, I want to do this where I live. And I'm not talking about just, you know, Brooklyn and San Francisco. I'm talking about Houston and the Carolinas and Chicago and, you know, all of the cities, rural and urban and in between. And we just came together as perfect strangers and started organizing online and eventually offline.
Can you take us back through that moment? So you wake up the next day and suddenly there's this viral thing and you have all of these people across the country that want to be part of this. How did you, even just those first 3 months, how did you organize it?
When I was in corporate communications as an executive, my job was to manage people all across the world who were working in communications too. It just seemed logical to me based on that experience to organize people by state so that they owned the work they wanted to do where they lived. And so you would do national work and you would do local work. And really our focus in those first few months was just trying to pass federal legislation on this issue. There was something called the Manchin-Toomey Bill, which is a bipartisan piece of legislation that would have closed the background check loophole that we have in this country, which allows unlicensed gun sales without a background check. For example, gun shows, online, garage sales. I knew that we needed to have a look and a feel, branding, messaging, that we needed to be present where people were on social media. I also want to say that so many brilliant, perfect strangers came to the table with their own skill sets, whether it was organizing or they were lawyers or they were website developers. I mean, it ran the gamut. And so without all of that help, you know, we never would have been able to succeed.
So you find yourself running this organization that you didn't anticipate. What was your personal life like at that point? I mean, how did you even have the childcare necessary to suddenly run this organization?
My kids were a little bit older when this happened. So they ranged in age from elementary to middle to high school to college. And that was part of my blended families. My stepdaughter is older. I have two stepdaughters. And so they weren't tiny, which was certainly helpful. But there was a real shift. I mean, it was a seismic shift in my marriage, in my parenting style, in my life. I can remember, you know, probably a month in, laying on the floor, crying, looking at the closet, thinking like, what have I done? Because I had never been busier in my corporate life. I was working from the moment I woke up till the moment I went to bed on this issue. And that included weekends. I look back now with perspective and can say that it was a really dramatic but also important change in my life. Certainly, my ex-husband, who I co-parent with, he had to step up. My husband had to step up, and they were doing things that frankly they probably should have been doing anyway. And also, you know, I always say that the amount of energy and passion I put into Moms Demand Action, I was probably putting into my kids' lives and homework, which isn't that healthy either. So it was a big change for everyone. But I, you know, I get asked the question all the time, did you feel absent? Did you feel guilty? And sure, I had those feelings, but I knew the work I was doing was incredibly important. I knew I was a role model to my kids. And I will tell you now, I've been doing this for almost 8 years. I just sent my very last kid to college. They never say, hey, you missed this soccer game, or hey, you didn't show up at this holiday event. What they say is, remember that time I went with you to that rally, or wow, mom, you know, I'm so proud of you. And I hope that other mothers hear that and know that when you do things that fuel yourself and your passion, it only benefits your kids.
I love that you said that, because I tell moms all the time, if you talk to adult children of working moms, there's no prouder group that will talk about their parents' careers and brag about their careers and what they learned. And, you know, there's a reason that daughters of working moms earn 23% more as adults than daughters of stay-at-home moms. And I think the more that message gets out there from people like you, the better off we all are. And I think that one of the incredible things about what you're doing is there's this legacy factor of, you know, even after you're done with this work, other people can take that on. Is that something you think about a lot, is how to pass the torch?
I think it's such a great question, because I talk a lot to volunteers. I write about it in my book, Fight Like a Mother. But to me, this has been all along part of a Buddhist practice. I am Buddhist, and there's so much to be learned about trying to put your ego aside, and it is hard, right? And I can tell you, I have stumbled, and I have faltered, and I have failed so many times along the way. But my goal is always that this organization is not about me or any specific person. It is about the cause. It is about gun violence survivors, and that it would last into perpetuity. This issue isn't going away anytime in the near future in this country. And we need not only new and younger volunteers that are women and moms, obviously, but also now we have Students Demand Action. You know, I also talk about the fact that when I started this organization, I was a white suburban mom living in a bubble. I did not realize that 100 Americans are shot and killed every day. And I started Moms because I was scared my kids weren't safe in their schools. And yet, you know, there are Black women who've been shouting this from the rooftops for decades with no attention. And it's really important also, you know, as we grow, I think that there's an important role for white women to do the work that we should have been doing for so long, but also to listen to Black and brown women who really are at the center of this pain and this issue.
You started Moms Demand Action in Indiana. What were your neighbors? What was the reaction of your neighbors in your community?
I can remember my kids not wanting to tell people what I did because, you know, it was such a hot point. I always tell the story of when I first started doing this work, I had all these trolls attacking me because, you know, all my information was public. So they were calling me and emailing me and texting me and sending letters to my house and driving by my house. And so I figured, you know, I should call the local police department and just give them a heads up and let them know what's going on. And the police officer who, you know, I explained what was going on, and he said, well, you know, ma'am, that's what you get when you mess with the Second Amendment. And that was such a wake-up call for me, you know, that the people that I think are there to protect me have an opinion on this issue, and that if it doesn't go along with mine, it may make me more vulnerable. And really, I think many of us in this movement have had that kind of moment where we had to decide, okay, are we gonna back down or are we gonna double down? You know, I mean, people open carrying show up at Moms Demand Action events all over the country all the time because it's legal, you know, in over 40 states. So they'll show up with a semi-automatic rifle to try to intimidate our volunteers. And so all of us have had those moments of, am I going to allow gun extremists to intimidate and silence me, or am I going to ignore it and let it become like white noise because I know that lives are on the line? And frankly, if we lose our children, you know, we have nothing left to lose.
What role do gun owners play in the organization? Because, you know, I've read a lot about Moms Demand Action and been a part of it. And, you know, the very clear statement is that the organization is not anti-gun, it's anti-gun violence.
Right. Many of our volunteers, particularly in rural areas or red states, are gun owners or their partners are gun owners. You know, even here in California where I live, I mean, more guns are sold in the state of California than any other state in the country, including Texas. So odds are you know a gun owner, and the vast majority of them are responsible. But again, we've been allowing the gun lobby and gun extremists to write our gun laws in this country for decades. And it's why we have a 25 times higher gun homicide rate than any other high-income country. It's why, you know, there aren't laws requiring people in many states to report lost and stolen guns. It's why we have such a culture of unsecure gun storage, right? What, name another country where toddlers shoot and kill their parents by accident. And so there's just so much work that needs to be done around restoring the responsibilities that should go along with gun rights. And that doesn't make you anti-gun.
Can you tell us a little more about gun storage? Because I know that's a huge issue. And I think that it's a catchphrase that some of our listeners might not be aware of the issue.
Yes. And it's an important discussion right now because there was a historic number of gun sales March through July of this year. Historic. Millions and millions of guns sold, many to first-time buyers who may live in states that don't require training or background checks, and may not know how to securely store a firearm. Secure gun storage is incredibly important right now. That simply means your guns are locked, unloaded, and separate from ammunition. That's how guns should be stored when children are around. And most school shooters in this country are actually students. And where do they get their guns? They get them from home, and they're not secured. I'm very worried, given this huge influx of gun sales, and when schools do start for real, you know, what's going to happen in this country? Because we know that too many states don't require secure gun storage. In those states that do, we see a lower number of unintentional shootings of kids by kids, gun suicides.
And now for a quick break.
Don't wait to create your dream room. Make it a reality today at Living Spaces, where you'll find a friendly, non-commissioned team of experts to help you design the perfect space with our huge selection of furniture, mattresses, home decor, and more, in stock and ready for delivery. And instead of waiting months for your furniture to arrive, get free shipping on any purchase as soon as tomorrow. Bringing your vision to life has never been easier or faster at Living Spaces and livingspaces.com.
Living Spaces.
Whether you're conquering the world or simply making it through the week, Ray Wellness offers a universe of pure and powerful supplements that nourishes your well-being throughout the day. Ray supports your mood, digestion, and skin with wellness solutions that are as unique as you. They also champion women's wellness with supplements that support sexual desire, vaginal health, and so much more. Ray believes well-being should be attainable for all, which is why their high-quality supplements are available without the sky-high markup. Even better, this women-led company is working to nourish the well-being of the next generation, which is why they donate 5% of all revenue to Girls, Inc. Shine from inside with Ray. You can find them at Target and RayWellness.co. That's R-A-E Wellness.co.
Now, Shannon, I don't want to leave this safety issue because I really want to understand how you keep safe. Right? I mean, if anyone would be a target, it would obviously be you. You had that first experience with the police officer who said you were infringing on Second Amendment. What have you done since then to feel safe traveling, to feel safe in your home, to protect your family?
Yeah, it is very bizarre. When I was traveling and before COVID, you know, I was probably traveling 3 weeks out of the month. I often had a security guard who would travel with me. I would have to use an alias, all because I support something as common and as widely supported as a background check on every gun sale. But I have to say, you know, certainly we do take measures to keep safe, you know, dog security alarms, things like that. But I just refuse to be intimidated. I refuse to be silenced and to not do this work, because there are gun extremists who believe that, you know, everyone should have easy access to guns. People in America don't agree with that. That's not a mainstream viewpoint, and we've got to make sure we get back to a place of reason on this issue.
I would imagine there's a ton of politicians who are always courting you because you have this giant group now of 6 million moms, right? What could be more powerful in terms of a politician wanting your support? How do you navigate the world of politics to the advantage of what the policies you're trying to infiltrate and to change?
Well, we have a very simple motto, which is if you do the right thing, we'll have your back. If you do the wrong thing, we'll have your job. And you have to show lawmakers that over and over again. And it does take time. No one gets involved in this work thinking it's going to happen overnight. You constantly are meeting with your lawmakers and making sure this issue is top of mind. You hold them accountable when they do the wrong thing, especially on social media. It's such a great tool for busy moms, right? To use a hashtag to shame their lawmakers who are voting for a bad bill. We have pulled the levers of power that are available to us. Right now, women only are about 25% of all lawmakers. We're less than 5% of Fortune 1000 CEOs, but we're the majority of the voting public, and we make about 80% of the spending decisions for our families. So those are the levers of power that we can pull, and it's what we do every day, all day long.
You use social media a lot, and I loved hearing you mention it and talking about becoming and being a political powerhouse, because I think it's so important.
Yeah, you know, I didn't have many Twitter followers until 2016 when Donald Trump won, and I just decided, you know, screw it, I'm going to use my real voice when I talk about these issues. And I have a lot of opinions on a lot of issues. And I am trained as a reporter, and so I have sort of mastered the 260 character soundbite, which makes you a popular follower on Twitter. And I train, and we train as an organization, other volunteers to do the same thing, because it is so important to show up in mass and to have a presence, but also to correct misinformation. I think it's such an important way for women to be political in this country, is on Twitter and on Instagram and other social media platforms where they can have a voice and tell their stories.
I feel so strongly about that. So does Amy too. And I think, you know, one of the things that always amazes me, and I feel like it's so becoming so obsolete, is someone who will say, oh, I don't get involved in politics. And it's kind of like, well, politics is involved with you. Like, it's no longer acceptable to say you don't get involved. And I think Twitter is such a great community, because sometimes I feel like, oh, my non-Twitter friends don't get me, because I, like you, Shannon and Amy, we all spend a lot of time on Twitter. But you are running such a giant organization, and I know something that Amy and I struggle with is, how do you manage, you know, how much time you're supposed to be spending on social media and responding to people and catching things, and then obviously running your company or organization? How do you think about that? Is that just something that is your primary thing? You're like managing social media all day while other things are coming in. You always have it up, or how do you manage that in your life?
You know, I say some people like play Candy Crush or have time to read, and I just fill that time with Twitter. And it is really important, I think, that someone in your organization is keeping an eye on your handle. You know, what are people saying about you? And I'll just give you an example. This past weekend, I noticed there was this fake racist meme with our logo on it that was everywhere. Every time I searched the Moms Demand handle, it was... And it was these gun extremists alleging we had made it, and then there were verified influencers who were just sharing it without doing the research. And I was having to find each of them and retweet it and say this is racist and fake, and then also comment, right? And eventually Reuters wrote an article about it this morning. But it's really part of brand awareness and protection, and a lot of that these days plays out in social media.
Talk to us about money and how you have funded your organization. And are you always raising money, or does that have cycles?
Yeah. So this is interesting. my husband agreed when I first started Moms Demand Action that I would be a volunteer. That was sort of my desire, right? I put a lot of my own money into the organization in the beginning. But I realized probably 6 months in that we would need a partner. This just wasn't sustainable. There was no way some lady from Indiana that nobody knew could fundraise and keep this organization going. And so I started interviewing organizations inside and outside the space. So women's organizations that might want a grassroots movement, gun safety organizations. Ultimately, there was an organization called Mayors Against Illegal Guns, which was started by the Boston mayor, Mayor Menino, and Mayor Mike Bloomberg from New York. And they were doing some similar work out there. I was seeing them show up in communities and trying to, after the federal legislation failed, to pass state and municipal legislation and policies. And so that was just a conversation that clicked. We had a lot of the same goals. And Mike has been very generous. The first year, he gave us $50 million, which, as you can imagine, turbocharged our work and our efforts. And since then, you know, he's continued to be very generous, but we are now actually bringing in more from our individual donors than we get from Mike. So I think in order for an organization to be healthy and, again, to last into perpetuity, you have to have every American feel like they have a stake in it. And that's how we do the fundraising.
And how is Mike involved in the day-to-day, or what is his role with the organization?
Well, you know, Mike has a lot of issues that he cares a lot about. Thankfully, this is one of them. But John Feinblad is our president at Every Town for Gun Safety. John and I work closely together on the organization and, you know, have had sort of a partnership now for almost 8 years.
So when you are doing your work, and I feel this sometimes, like you just feel like you're pouring something in a glass and someone else is pouring it out, right? It can feel like that, especially, you know, the last time I saw you was right before COVID, and it was such a different time.
Yes.
In terms of what you were probably thinking about, and you had no idea that you were then heading into a period where people were buying guns in droves to allegedly protect themselves from a pandemic, which actually seems insane, right? When you talk about it that way. But how do you not have that come your way and feel, oh my goodness, all my work, you know, for naught? Like, how do you sit every day and just stay positive?
I'm positive because I see all of the good work that's going on. Again, this is a marathon, not a sprint. You don't get into this work thinking it's going to happen overnight. You know you're going to lose. Thankfully, we win more than we lose. Our organization calls it losing forward. We have passed background checks now in 22 states. We have passed red flag laws in 19 states. We have disarmed domestic abusers in 29 states. And the work that is getting done is important and life-saving. And I really do think it's just a matter of time until we have the laws we need at a federal level.
This is really heavy and hard work. Are you ever able to step away and take time for yourself?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, a lot of what I do on social media is tell the stories that no one would necessarily see, you know? And I find for some reason it hits home hardest for me because I'm always seeing young men who are about my son's age that are shot and killed. And those are the stories that seem to stick with me the most. And, you know, I have the kind of personality where things often make me angry, and that's what fuels me. And I can just be fueled by that and not feel depressed or sad, just kind of angry. But then, you know, I can remember last Christmas Eve, my husband and I were at a hotel, and for some reason I saw this boy, again, a young teen boy who had been shot and killed at a university in North Carolina, and his girlfriend posted this incredibly moving Instagram story about his life. And that was it. Like, I was in bed that whole day crying. And my husband kind of looked at me like, you know, what's going on? And I do think that in this country, we struggle with this secondhand PTSD because there is so much gun violence. And then when you're doing this work on top of it, it can be really hard. But, you know, I guess I would say two things. One is self-care is really important, and it's something we talk about all the time in our organization, and how to do that. I said it's a marathon, not a sprint. It's a relay race too. So you got to pass the baton when you need to. And the other thing I would say is, you know, I'm doing this work as a non-gun violence survivor. Thankfully, I have never been impacted personally by gun violence, but so many people I work with have, and they wake up and they still do this work every single day. And certainly if they can, I can too.
What was your husband's real reaction? I mean, I understand he was like, what's going on? But he also must have been pretty annoyed. I mean, you're on vacation.
He was annoyed.
And you're in bed crying. And again, and it's not like a story he hasn't heard before. He hears these stories from you every day. So how does it impact your relationship, and what's his role in that?
Well, you know, because this is both of our second marriage, we committed at the beginning that we would go to marriage therapy no matter what, every 2 weeks, even if things seemed fantastic. Which, as you know, for anyone who goes to marriage therapy, you know that even if things seem fantastic, you find something to complain about during your session. But, you know, being able to talk about that, I can remember we had a conversation about that incident in therapy where I think he was kind of like, I didn't really get it. And I felt like, why weren't you more comforting? Why didn't you get it? And I thought the therapist was really helpful in that she said, you know, some people can't take in this information at all and would be like this anytime they heard any of these stories. And Shannon does this, and it sort of builds up, and this is what happens. And I think that helped him understand, oh, this is going to happen occasionally, or when it happens, this is why.
Right.
It's happening.
That's a great analogy, the build up. What are the kinds of things that get you upset on the other end?
With him?
Yes.
Well, since COVID started, I will tell you, he is a very loud talker on conference and Zoom calls, which I did. I mean, he can be in the basement and I am upstairs and I can hear every word. And I don't know if that's grounds for divorce, but really, I have to say that COVID has made our marriage so much. It's just, we're so close right now and it has been wonderful. And he has just gone on his first business trip in 7 months and he called me and he said, "My God, I've left the pod. I want to come back to the pod." So, you know, there are very, very few things to complain about with him, but he is a loud talker.
How did you, but going back, like before you met your husband, how did you make it work as a single mom of three little kids working?
It was not easy. And, you know, my ex-husband is such a great co-parent and such a good dad and so incredibly helpful. You know, our issue was never that we didn't like each other. It was that we got married too young. And so, you know, he was fantastic and has been all along. In fact, when I said we had moved, you know, he moved too when we moved states. So that certainly has made it easier. But, you know, I think it's important that dads, stepdads chip in and do as much of the heavy lifting. My husband does all the cooking. I do all the laundry. And everyone just has to find their niche.
Sam and I are both in marriages where there's a lot of co-parenting and a lot of sharing of responsibility. I don't think it wouldn't work otherwise. So
we're big advocates that you can't reach your full potential unless you have a partner at home or if you're single, right? But if you are saddled with a very sort of unjust division of labor, it's very hard to reach any potential.
I also think there's something to be said for three or more parents. You
makes
know,
sense.
I mean,
yeah.
It's like man on man defense.
It makes sense.
Although you together have five children, correct?
Yes, my husband has two and I have three.
My kids are between 17 months and six. And I'm convinced I won't remember any of this. Like I go through life and I'm like, I'm not going to remember this in 5 years.
I don't remember any of that either. I'm like in the teen years and I can't remember yesterday, let alone like 5 years ago.
Perimenopause wipes all of it out.
Great.
And now for a quick break.
Have you ever seen a rescue dog curled up in a warm bed for the first time or run through the grass with a huge smile on their face? At Cuddly, they champion these stories every day, taking neglected and abused animals and helping them find the love and care they deserve. Each year, 6.5 million animals enter rescue centers looking for a second chance at life. Cuddly is the only dedicated platform built specifically for animal rescues worldwide. Cuddly works with thousands of nonprofit animal welfare groups to help rescued animals receive supplies and medical care as they begin their journey to recovery. Cuddly supports over 2,100 animal rescues, and last month, Cuddly sent over 42,000 products to over 1,500 rescue animals in need. Help a furry friend in need by donating pet products on their wish list. Go to Cuddly.com and be their hero today.
It seems like no matter how old the kids are, when they get together with their friends, they want to eat fast food, sweets, and any junk they can get their hands on. Sometimes the best part of a play date is snack time. All that can throw the kids' diet off balance just a little. But we know there's help with Child Life Essentials and their long line of products. They have everything from pure DHA for good brain development to First Defense, vitamin C, and echinacea to help keep the kids healthy and active, you know, for more play dates to come. There's so many great elements to what Child Life has to offer, and we haven't even mentioned their products are non-GMO, gluten-free, low in sugar, naturally sweetened, and of course, everything is delicious. Learn more at childlifenutrition.com and save 20% on all Child Life Essentials products with code IHEARTCL at checkout on amazon.com/childlife.
When you think about, you know, post-COVID, you're back out in the world, what's something that now that you've had, you know, perspective and you're not traveling 3 weeks a month, what's something that you would like to accomplish that you haven't yet?
I would love to learn to speak Spanish. Not that I'm going to learn Spanish before we're all vaccinated, but maybe I could just get immersed.
Now, we are going to go to our lightning round where we do a bunch of speed questions. But before we do, I have one last question for you, which is, what would you say to someone who's listening and thinks, I want to advocate for XYZ cause, I'm passionate about it, whether it's gun violence or whether it's LGBTQ rights or whether it's gender, whatever it is, what would you say to someone who's afraid to use their voice because of what other people will think or how it might impact their home life or their careers or their social life?
I just think if you look at the state the country is in right now, we all have a moral obligation, a moral imperative to speak up, to speak out, frankly, to run for office. You know, I think too many women are not jumping into the arena. And I don't care if you run for sheriff or coroner or school board, run for something, because, again, we only hold, about 17% of the 500,000 elected positions in this country. It is just, if we want to shape a more just and fair and equitable and kind world for our children and their children and our communities, then we have to get involved. You know, that's what I learned when I got off the sidelines, to get involved in this issue. And I wrote a book called Fight Like a Mother. The reason I wrote the book was because I wanted it to be partly a manual of how other people, particularly women, could do this, could replicate what I did, even if it's just in their neighborhood, and it could be on any issue. I wanted to remember and write down what happened from the very beginning and encourage other women to be activists. I certainly never saw myself as one until Moms to Man Action.
Amy, do you want to kick us off with our lightning round now?
What is your favorite breakfast?
Every day I eat cinnamon special K and almond milk. But I would rather have a breakfast sandwich. I just don't know how to make one.
My husband just got a breakfast sandwich maker that he makes for the kids, and I actually can't stand them. But I got it for him for Father's Day from all of us, and it was really a gift to the kids.
There is something called a breakfast sandwich maker?
Yes, I will send you the link. I'll send you the link. And it literally will change your life. You just put the English muffin in. It takes it's really easy.
My mouth is watering.
So what are you watching on TV these days?
Oh, all the Housewives franchises. Again, cut me some slack because it's COVID. The Queen's Gambit was wonderful. I'm getting ready to watch The Crown. I like The Undoing.
Oh, The Undoing's so good.
Oh, Roadkill is an English political drama that's also funny. It's excellent.
Okay, I'm writing that one down. And we are actually almost out of time, so I want to make sure we have time for our male perspective. Lou Burns. Lou, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
So Shannon, Lou has been listening, and he did not, his thing is he doesn't do any research before the episode. So he just learns about you through the episode, and then he asks his big question.
Hi, Lou.
Hi, Shannon. You're doing some really good work. My niece and goddaughter was a student at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas School. And we got a call the next day finding out that she was in class that day. And right. I had a great talk with her, and I have a question that's kind of loaded on both ends. But I was looking at the Vegas one where almost 411 people were killed and like over 800 were injured, you know. And this gentleman, you know, no one would ever imagine he would have ever did something like that. So my question is like, would a background check really prevent more gun violence?
So, you know, background checks are the most important foundational part of a gun safety system, which we don't have in this country. Background checks simply prevent people who shouldn't have guns from getting them. So in this country, if you buy a gun from a licensed dealer, for example, Walmart, you have to have a background check. That system works. It stops millions of people who shouldn't have guns from getting them. Where the system falls down is that federal law does not require unlicensed dealers to perform a background check. So if you are a domestic abuser in more than half the states in this country, all you have to do is go to a gun show or arrange a gun sale online and get a gun, no questions asked. So we know that background checks are foundational and would save a huge number of lives right away.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Shannon.
Thank you.
So I think what's so amazing about Shannon, and I really can't get enough of this story, is just how she mobilized so many people. She had such a tiny, tiny community on Facebook. And as she said, she now has 6 million people as part of her community. It's really inspirational.
It is inspirational. And I think it's a lesson to us all that even if we feel like we're beginning from nothing, we can build something really important and something really big. And along those lines of sharing and building community, Sam, do not forget to send Shannon the name of that breakfast sandwich maker.
I won't.
Thanks for listening to What's Her Story with Sam and Amy.
We would so appreciate if you would leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, connect with us on social media at What's Her Story Podcast.
What's Her Story with Sam and Amy is powered by my company, The Riveter, at theriveter.co, and Sam's company, Park Place Payments, at parkplacepayments.com.
Thanks to our producer, Laurel Moglen, our podcast associate, Emma Hard, and our male perspective, Lou Burns.
Are you a gig worker or self-employed? Wombly has helped over 100,000 small businesses get a PPP loan. You may qualify for up to $41,000 in 100% forgivable loans. The program ends soon and funds are limited. Apply now at womply.com/apply. That's womply.com/apply.
Hey guys, this is Joe Piazza, host of The Committed Podcast. Who is ready for season 6 of Committed? The only podcast that gives you a look into the raw, intimate, hilarious, and often heartbreaking stories of real marriage. Committed Season 6 will be launching on April 14th. So be sure to subscribe and share Committed with all of the people you think need marriage counseling. You can listen to the Committed podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.